Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. Today, we're going to talk with USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist Dan Weber about what happened in the desert over the weekend, what's been going on in practice this week as the Trojans are in a bye week getting ready for Washington. We'd love to hear from you, so send us your questions. Podcast at USCFootball.com is our email address. Or you can leave us a voicemail, 641-715-3900, extension 816-646 is the number. Or you can go to our website, peristylepodcast.com, click on the left side of the page, and leave a voicemail right from your device. Of course, you can subscribe on iTunes, itunes.com/peristylepodcast, really simple to get to. Leave us a rating there. That would be great. You can leave us any kind of feedback you want. That would be awesome. And you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast apps. We're on Stitcher and all that kind of stuff. So check it out there. And let's bring in Dan Weber. Dan, an interesting weekend with USC kind of bouncing back. And still a lot of people have questions. There's a lot of concerns. Some people are happy, some people aren't. But I guess it's kind of expected after the loss to Stanford a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we want to be shown. I mean, I think the thing that they're worried about a little bit is, you know, the people up front. You know, is the offensive line getting better? The fact that they didn't get a lot of yards running the ball against, you know, the Arizona State blitzers who outnumbered them, took tremendous chances. Still, people are worried, you know, just 76 yards rushing on 32 carries. And they're a little worried about, you know, the defensive front not being able to just really, you know, they hit some good plays. Delvon Simmons on the goal line with the fumble, knocking the ball loose and getting Chris Hawkins on the 94-yard return. But they gave up a lot of yards, especially stuff, you know, right at them. So I think those two things have people worried. You know, just were they physical enough? Are they tough enough? Are they, you know, going to be able to control games at the line of scrimmage, I think, is the thing that is worrying people.
Now, I think you're right, and we actually have a whole bunch of questions. That's a good segue. We have questions about the line play, so I'll play you a voicemail one first and get your comments.
Hi, guys. This is Alan in St. Louis. Thanks again for the podcast. This question is for Dan Weber. Good win, but I'm a little concerned with what I'm seeing on the offense and defensive lines. From what I can tell, I think that both sides of the ball, the lines are letting the game come to them. And what I mean by that is no one seems to be engaging and pushing their man into the second level. It's either a bull rush on defense and maybe a swim move that gets to the quarterback, or on offense, you really see even in rushing plays, it seems like the offensive line is letting the defense get to them, and then our running backs are making athletic plays in order to get into the secondary. So my question for Dan is this on purpose? Is there a philosophy or some scheme involved, or is there just some type of technique that the players aren't applying and that we'll see some progress throughout the season? Again, thanks for the podcast, and fight on.
Yeah, good question from St. Louis. I think you know, on the defensive line, you know, the word we got this year was they weren't going to read and react. They were going to attack. They were going to be aggressive. We haven't seen that a lot. We've seen it occasionally. We saw it, you know, they picked it up a little bit, you know, against Arizona State. But not enough. And we saw some, you know, guys in double teams that just, you know, got up high and just got taken out of the play. You know, there's no Leonard Williams, you know, this year to, you know, beat those double teams. On offense, I don't know what it, I think they improved. They thought they only had one really busted play, you know, in terms of, you know, breakdown in terms of who was supposed to block who and all that kind of thing. So they thought that was better. It just doesn't look on both sides of the ball like they're really attacking people. I mean, you know, if they, there are people who say, and you know, we can't totally verify this, that, you know, they may have the biggest offensive line in the country. And what are they doing, you know, with that? What, you know, what are they getting out of that? Are they attacking people? and pushing him into that next level, like you'd like to see him do it. No, not yet. Now, is that going to come? Is that going to happen? We'll see. One of the ways they got to run the ball the other night is they put two fullbacks in the game, and here this sort of a, they're calling it a Cowboys formation, but, kind of a diamond formation with fullbacks on both sides of Cody and the tailback behind him, which gave him, you know, some more blocking at the line of scrimmage. But you'd like to, with the talent they've got, the talent we think they've got, you'd like to see them be able to handle some of that with their, you know, with the guys on the line of scrimmage. And we haven't really seen that yet.
Dan, I wanted to mention was one of the guys we got to see in Arizona, was Michael Moline, and he's our sponsor for the Tuesday show, Michael Moline Real Estate. So if you're in Southern California and you need any kind of real estate advice, you need some help, you can go to michaelmolinerealestate.com or you can give him a call at 310-275-4688. So he's a true Trojan based in Beverly Hills, and you actually will have a more detailed message at the end of the show for Michael. But I just want to get your – I mean, we got to talk to him a little bit and see the stats set up and stuff we saw at the home thing, and then they kind of – you know, what they do on the road and stuff too. So they're, I liked what they did stats wise at ASU and what they were talking about there.
Yeah, they were terrific. They had game notes emailed to us before the game was over. I mean, that was terrific.
Yeah.
They did a really good job of, you know, not just putting the, you know, the quote sheets out and things like that, but getting all those emailed to you and stats up to date. I thought they were, you know, and maybe you need to do that at Arizona State because it's like watching a game from a helicopter because you're watching those guys from, you know, overhead and you don't get a full body view on a lot of plays. I mean, but heck of a job, you know, by the Arizona State people, you know, on stats, except for the participation chart, which seemed wildly off in terms of the numbers, but, I don't know if their computer didn't read the numbers properly or not, but otherwise, terrific job. And Michael was there to see how they do it in other places and, was surprised that he said hi. And I'm thinking, you know, he sounds familiar, you know, and there he was, in the Arizona State press box.
Yeah. And his daughter goes to Arizona State. So that's kind of cool. Let's go to the questions. Dennis in Lancaster. He said, with our tight ends averaging one reception per game, do you think Cody will start using them ever? And when he does, it's a 2 yard out. It seems like everybody in the NCAA and NFL has figured this out, but him. Love the show and fight on.
Yeah, I think you do have to, the fact that basically they're all new. And I think with Cody, you gotta, you know, kind of earn his, you know, trust. And, you know, it's, those are always work in progress. And, you know, they've been, you know, switching, you know, you've got basically three guys, there. And, you know, I think it'll come, as we, it's not like, you know, though that they're having trouble getting the ball to the other people. I mean, you know, I think, for example, I think there are only four teams. I saw this stat today. Four teams in the country who have thrown the ball to 17 different receivers. Two of them are USC, UCLA. I think Boston College is one. Boy, I can't remember who the fourth one is. But USC, you know, hasn't had a problem in finding people to throw the football to. But as you say, you know, I think they could throw it to the tight end a little bit more. I think that'll probably happen, but right now I think they're, you know, heck, they didn't target, you know, Dory Jackson last week at all.
Yeah.
So, I'd rather have him find a Dory right now than the tight end.
Makes sense. Tark wants to know, Kenny Bigelow always seems to do well when given a chance. Should we see more of him in the coming weeks?
Well, I think we got down to the field Saturday, and he had one of the best looking sacks and just, you know, obliterated, you know, the Arizona State kid and was flying through there. And yet I think Kenny's got to convince them that he will do that on every play. He'll play with that kind of, you know, passion and speed and, you know, exertion and attention to detail and all that on every play. and do that in practice as well. And he's got to convince, Coach Wilson that, Coach, you put me out there and you're going to get that out of me every play. I do think that if there's one thing you wonder about the defensive line, I seem to maybe take plays off. And I don't know, that they're loafing or anything. I don't exactly know what it is, but I think you've got to get guys that play with absolute total passion, the way Leonard did last year, every play, play in, play out. And you do hear guys saying that that's one of the things they're learning. They're learning to, to do that kind of, every play, every play, every play. And it's something that, that I think they all have to do. Kenny's one of those guys that has to convince the coaches, don't worry about me. If I'm out there, I'm all over it every play. Probably hasn't happened yet.
Big Nick in Cypress wanted to know who the player you thought the player of the game was, and which team, which group you felt played the best for the team.
Player of the game.
I mean, Cody Kessler had five touchdowns. Like, that's good.
Yeah, we don't even think about about Cody. I think when he does that, I thought a couple of things that he did. The third and 13, and he runs for 21.
Yeah,
and then he made it look easy. The one time that he escaped, when two guys probably should have sacked him, and he ends up completing a first down pass to Justin Davis. So you have to go pretty hard to find somebody else besides Cody. Although, when you've got a Dory Jackson, just, he got him going. I mean, that 80-yard, touchdown pass I think those demoralized the other team. I mean, he just made it look so easy. He was out there with that, I guess Jordan Simone was their, their guy that is pretty much their leader on defense. And he couldn't, if he had a baseball bat, he wouldn't have been able to hit, Adoree. Adoree just went around him so easily and put it into gear. And so you gotta like, Adoree when he gets the ball on offense. If he's going to get it four or five times, he's always probably going to be in the running, I would think.
And what
position group?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I can't think of one. Like, nothing pops in my head like, oh, that group.
Yeah, if you want to, say the secondary got a couple of those turnovers, and that was the big emphasis of the week was, take the ball away, get that turnover, and you got Plattenberg doing exactly what he's supposed to do with Isaiah Langley playing in front, and they disguised the cover two and got Berkovici to, to overthrow it and picked it off, and then for Chris Hawkins to be right on the money and alertly, not only scoop it, but, pick it up and go with it. I would give that group probably, they did a pretty good job. The secondary did.
Yeah, that's I think I would go with them too. That's a good one. All right. The good questions there. We have one from Matt. I was very impressed by the downfield blocking by USC. Stephen Mitchell in particular seems to love it. And that's a great thing. How is it that the coaching staff has motivated the skill position players to be interested in the dirty work of blocking?
Well, I think a lot of that, two ways you can look at that. I think T. Martin does a really good job, and he really, really, it's always been a focus and emphasis. And he's got an enforcer in Juju Smith-Schuster. When your best player blocks the way Juju does, it's really, he's blocking for those other guys. How can those other guys not be, following in his footsteps? I mean, I thought it was great that the one guy that, he got into that little to-do in practice for not blocking, Isaac Whitney, was the guy who probably got a bad call. I'm guessing it was a Pac-12 call, so he probably didn't come down with his heel on the sideline, but came back the next play, and he gets the big block that springs Stephen Mitchell for the touchdown. And then Stephen Mitchell was down there when Adoree got loose. And so, yeah, they'll fight you. down the field. I think they really take pride in that. But I do think I credit a lot of that to Juju and the fact that the way, you know, T. Martin teaches it with the kind of attention to detail. I think, you know, they're starting to pick up on that maybe they were young last year. They maybe didn't quite get into it as much as, you know, Nelson Aguilar, I think, tried to show them, but maybe they weren't ready yet. But this year, they really take a lot of pride in going after people downfield.
We have another voicemail question for you. Here you go.
Dan, this is Randall in Dallas. I'm having a hard time understanding this offensive line that protects Cody so well not being able to open up any lanes for the running backs. Help me figure this out. Was it ASU's defense, or is it on the technique? What's going on? Juju, I said it before, this kid is killing everything out there. Talk to you next week.
You know, I think there wasn't a good answer a week ago. I think Saturday at Arizona State, I mean, I think Coach Conley pretty much explained it exactly what they were doing. He said if USC had a tight end in, which basically means you've got six, you know, blockers, Arizona State would come with seven. If you brought in a fullback, which gives you seven protectors or blockers, Arizona State came with eight. I mean, they basically adjusted their defense to however many USC had plus one. And with the thought that they'd just come through all the gaps and they were running, you know, all kinds of, you know, twists and stunts. And USC, again, I thought, you know, protected Cody really well considering how many times they were, you know, they were blitzing and coming with everything. And I don't think, I mean, I'd still like to see more, you know, push and more pop and more oomph at the line of scrimmage, even if they're coming with that many people. I still think you ought to be able to, you know, create a seam, or you ought to be able to, I don't know that I'm seeing enough quickness. I don't know if I'm seeing enough just absolute pop, you know, off. I mean, they were working on starts and stances a lot today and sprints out of the starts and stances. So we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, this line has the potential to be one of those lines that can knock you off the line of scrimmage. I mean, one would think that, for example, Ohio State last year started out really awful and couldn't do anything against Virginia Tech and got beat at home. And by the end of the year, they were just blowing everybody out with a lot of three-star guys. Didn't have a lot of, you know, real big-name guys, but they just kept getting better and better. And you got to hope that this, you know, offensive line really figures it out. And, yeah, they've got some issues. You know, Zach Banner against the speed rush. I mean, that's a problem. And they've got to, you know, get a little better at that. And they've got to get their pad level a little better. They just got to keep working at it. I think it's really important to keep working at it and keep getting better. I thought today they had a better day. I thought, you know, that's a positive. I like the way Coach Conley talked about it today. And, you know, but they ought to be. I agree with you, Randall.
There was more kind of questions on the line too. Garrett Seattle had a little bit different take. He thinks they're not playing to the, that they're not playing to the strengths of the players on both the offensive and defensive sides. That's, for instance, the offensive line seems to do much better on simple, straight-ahead, man-on-man, hit-the-guy-in-front-of-you type of run blocking. However, they seem to be more of an emphasis on running complex, slow-developing counters, trappings, pullings, or stretch type of plays. Things are going sideways, and the defense could come pour into the backfield and pursue through the gaps. He said, conversely, for the defensive line, it's more basic in their attack, usually just kind of rushing straight ahead, and they could use more creativity and movement like stunts and slants and twists to help get more penetration and pressure. He says, I realize it can't be all one way all the time, but shouldn't it lean more heavily to what the player's strengths are and what puts them in the best position to succeed? What are your thoughts? And that's from Garrett in Seattle.
Yeah, Garrett, I think bingo. I mean, I think on both sides of the line, I agree with you. I would like to see him run more of the quick hitter stuff and the straight ahead stuff and the man on man stuff. I'm not crazy about, you know, this team. I'm not sure that the stretch plays match these guys' talents. I think I'm going to ask Sark about that tomorrow. If there's any thought, of redesigning kind of how they get into the run game. I mean, he laughed today when I, asked him, we're going to see more of that, that Cowboys, two fullbacks, which gives them the ability to run power one direction. You can run both of those guys as blocking backs in front. You can run, a lead blocker and just run it straight up into the, the A gap. You can do a lot of things, with it. And they got it going a little bit because it enabled them to be, to outnumber Arizona State, and they ran a play action touchdown out of it. So, maybe they're, I think they're thinking about, are we doing all the right things, in the run game? And I think, for example, I think Ronald Jones is just a terrific, getting through the hole quick and, let him make one cut. And if a linebacker misses him, now you got him one on one with some safety and see what happens, or corner, depending on which way it cuts. As far as the defensive line, I agree. I think they, I think they thought that's how they were going to be playing, with more movement and more, slants and more kind of combination stuff and team stuff, rather than just one guy, on one, getting double teamed and trying to stand up and, fight his way through. So I think, we say this all the time, it's a work in progress on both sides of the ball up front, but it really is. And, you just probably have to hope they figure it out and say, okay, we have to be moving. We can't wait. We can't wait for people to come to us. We gotta, if you want to, they talked about how, you can't let the run game be played on your side of the line of scrimmage the way Stanford did, for example, or the way Arizona State did. And there's a way to stop that is by attacking and, penetrating and actually, getting, and I think there are a lot of people that are starting to wonder, should the basic defense be more of a four-man front instead of a three-man front?
Yeah.
I'm tending to agree that maybe it should. But let's see where, they got a week to figure it out with the Washington game, and then that three-game stretch, the next three, you better be ready to play some defense, at Notre Dame, Utah coming in, and then at Cal. They got to get it right.
Certainly do. One more line question, Jan Ukaipa. He says, good win, lots to be pleased with, but the offensive line, Ryan, the O-line, always with penalties. What is going on? Is it a coaching thing or perhaps a discipline thing? What say you, Ryan and Dan? Thanks, Ryan, from Jan Ukaipa.
Yeah, I asked Coach Conley that, and he just said, absolutely no excuses for that. It's just unacceptable. They have to get better. Didn't go into what it was. I mean, he said, there were a lot of stress on him with bringing all those people. I don't think they were very happy with how the game was going. But those drive-killing penalties just have to stop. And he said the worst ones of all are the pre-snap penalties, where you're basically, you're not focused in. And he said, okay, you could explain a little bit of it. It's the first game on the road. First game where crowd noise is really, a factor against you and learning to do that. But he said, that's it. We've done it now. No excuses, going forward. We'll see. I mean, let's face it, you're in the Pac-12. And, the same guys who, I think, flagged USC for 7 penalties the first 2 games, flagged them for 18 penalties the second 2 games. So, it's, so what else is new? So some of it, and they flagged Arizona State for 2. I mean, Arizona State, is a wild bunch. And, it was like they couldn't do anything wrong penalty-wise. So you just have to understand that. And it's got to be a little cooler. And I think there was some frustration on the offensive line, but that has to stop.
All right, we got 2 more, and then we'll let you go, Dan. I know you're a busy man. This one says, I loved watching over and over the touchdown catch by Adoree Jackson, along with the awesome block by Steven Mitchell. Yeah, that's what I enjoyed last week, too, in the Stanford game. Oh, wait, that's right. Adoree didn't play a down on offense the previous week. Why is that again? P.S., thanks to Coach Todd Graham for allowing our USC defense to have nice breathers between plays by slowing down their offense to use the entire clock. Defenses that are playing on the road in 100-degree heat definitely need these. Seriously, thanks. Stephen Poway, PSS, you and Dan Rock, keep the podcast coming.
Yeah, you aren't the only one thanking Todd Graham. I actually listened to his little presser today, and it was interesting. He said a couple of things that USC people might be interested in. He said, this week they play the best team that they're going to play, UCLA. He said, last week was the most talented team we were going to play, USC. Interesting little commentary there. You can take it with, you know, good and bad, and you probably wouldn't want to argue with him. Yeah, I don't think anybody was sure exactly why. I mean, he didn't play as many players, though. I don't think they've got much depth. So I think he decided that he may have been, you know, the whole USC playing a lot of guys. I think that threw him off a little bit and got him to huddle. I think he decided he was just not going to go that up-tempo because they got a lot of guys they can throw in there on defense. I think that benefited USC, to be honest. That's one of those things, you know, you didn't know how it's going to work out. But I think it really benefited USC. Yeah, as to the Stanford game and letting them control the tempo, and there is an issue. Another thing Todd Graham said, he said their goal in the game was to run 80 plays, and they thought USC would only run 65, and I think it turned out to be they ran 79, USC ran 63. So he was pretty much on the money there. I mean, you got to factor in USC's got the home run hitters, and they, you know, probably aren't going to run as many plays. And when you're playing Arizona State and they're not letting you run the ball, even, you know, second half when you'd think, well, you ought to be able to run the ball, you got a 35-0 lead. They wouldn't let USC do that. So, you know, it's probably going to work out, you know, kind of those numbers. But by only running, you know, 79 plays, I think it didn't put that much pressure on the USC defense, and that was probably a benefit. And I'm not sure what, you know, the right answer for Todd Graham was if he thought USC had a lot more players that they could run into the game, which is kind of amazing when you think about it. But I think there's no question USC had more guys that they could put on the field than Arizona State did.
Yeah, and if USC was thanking Todd Graham for not running a hurry-up, David Shaw was probably thanking USC for not putting Adoree Jackson on offense.
Right, or running the hurry-up, or even getting the ball back, or even deciding to play on the Stanford side of the line of scrimmage. Yeah. All of those things, yeah. You're exactly right. Thank you very much. week after week. And it is a coach's league, and it's a coach's matchup. And I'll be interested to watch Arizona State this week. I think, you know, the way UCLA has, you know, been so dominant running the football and the way Arizona State plays the run, I'm going to be interested to how that matchup goes and how the UCLA kids, are they going to be ready? They, you know, beat the heck out of Arizona State last year and they saw the USC game with Arizona State. I'll be interested to see how UCLA is ready to go Saturday night in the Rose Bowl.
We got one last one. It's very appropriate because of the way practice was run earlier today. It's from Irvin. He says, hey, question for you, Dan. How has Sam Darnold looked with the scout team? And do you think Wilcox should let Porter Gustin rush the passer more?
Well, I think they need to work with him on technique. I mean, you'll see him trying and he's kind of, you know, standing up and fighting him a little bit. I think he's got to work on some moves and maybe not go straight in at him and just use his athleticism and get around the corner. But I think, you know, we'll see those things develop over the year, how quickly they do for true freshmen. I don't think you could even begin to predict that, especially in a, you know, position like that. But, yeah, I think I'd, you know, I'd be working with him every day on just, you know, individual moves and kind of, you know, how do you, you know, you make your body narrower? How do you go in sideways? You know, how do you, you know, come around that corner and get your hand out just enough to, you know, to get to the quarterback, even if that, you know, offensive tackle's getting a piece of you, because he's 6'5" and he's got that kind of, you know, explosiveness. Let's see. The other question was,
Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold.
Oh, today he got his big chance today. I thought he looked really good. They did a lot of work with the second group. So the second group I'm talking about, not the starters, but the guys that are in the rotations on both offense and defense, or right at the fringes of the rotation, and they played a lot. And he got a chance at the end, step in for Max Brown, and he looked terrific. I mean, he ran the ball, he ran it, he threw it. You know, it's nice to see him when they run that zone read, and the quarterback, you know, can really take advantage and take off with it. But I thought he just looked. I thought he had a really good day. He's impressive. I think they. You know, there's a reason why, you know, Ricky Town is out of town now. Sam is, he's a very, very good player. And he's handling the whole redshirt thing, I think, really well. Understands, you know, what it means for him. And just, you know, when you see a practice like today and you think, wow, you know, I mean, we've seen him. He you know, he does a really nice job in the scout. But in the scout team, you're running somebody else's offense. And you run it with all the scout guys, and it's never, you know, quite realistic. But today it was, and he was very good.
All right, Dan. Well, great stuff. We appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights. It's a bye week, so it's a little more relaxed. USC won, so we don't have the, you know, dozens and dozens of angry emailers and voicemailers. So it's nice, a little more subdued, which is it was kind of nice.
Right, and I don't think they were wrong to be upset about last week. I think they were legitimately, you know, correct. I mean, they're, you know, you can understand young team, you know, Stanford plays the perfect game. I mean, I think it's interesting that you're still seeing a lot of people say, you know, I think it were at least a couple of guys on ESPN the other day. Trevor Mattis, I think, was one of them. Are predicting a Stanford USC rematch, you know, in the Pac-12 championship game, which I think would be wonderful. I mean, I think, you know, so there a lot of people have not, you know, totally jumped off the USC bandwagon. They've got to get better. They've got to improve, as Coach Conley said today. They're not nearly good enough, but you know, they've got a chance. I mean, all you can ask for at this point is to have a chance, and they've just got to keep getting better. And I thought today's practice was a step in the right direction, and that's all you can do, one practice at a time. And it would be the thing we'd all probably enjoy seeing if they got that rematch with Stanford.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So USC will be back on the practice field on Wednesday, so check back on uscfootball.com for that. There's some time off. They'll be practicing again kind of over the weekend, getting ready. It's like the game week leading up to the Thursday practice, so we'll be on the site, you know, posting all the updates and stuff from practice. But and we'll have our regular shows again early next week, kind of previewing USC versus Washington. So if you have any more questions, you can definitely send them in. But thanks again, Dan, for coming on. Great stuff.
Enjoyed it. Thank you, Ryan.
All right. Thanks to Dan and everyone else. You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time. And here's a quick message from our buddy Michael Moline at Michael Moline Real Estate.
Most people know that buying or selling real estate is no small undertaking. Understanding the market value of your home, pricing, advertising, closing, and perhaps even selling personal property along the way are all examples of the real estate journey. And Michael Moline Real Estate has the experience to help make that journey an enjoyable one. Southern California real estate inventories are at historic lows, so there is no better time than now to sell your residential property. Whether you're moving into a bigger home or downsizing, personal property is often a component of the real estate estate transaction. Michael Moline Real Estate has industry expertise to help you with both your real property and your personal property as you get ready to transition. Michael Moline Real Estate specializes in properties located on the west side of Los Angeles and the southern San Fernando Valley communities. Allow Michael Moline Real Estate to give you a free comparative market analysis and home valuation so you know how much your home is worth today. Contact Michael Moline at michaelmolinerealestate.com. That's Michael, M-O-L-I-N-E, realestate.com.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.